Welcome to the Iron Mind Podcast. Join me, Josh Brumley, as we explore the minds of those who forged their paths through legal battles, business triumphs, and creative conquests. In each episode, we sit down with inspiring individuals who've sharpened their resolve in the fires of entrepreneurship and law. From lawyers breaking barriers to entrepreneurs overcoming obstacles, we uncover the stories behind their iron wills and innovative minds. Get ready for thought-provoking conversations, practical insights, and actionable advice. This is the Iron Mind Podcast. Your background is HR, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea of being a small business owner, you don't have an HR person. And a lot of businesses make a ton of HR type kerfuffles. I don't know. What's a polite way of saying fuck ups? What are some of the things that you think small business owners should know about running a business, especially in Washington or in Seattle proper? There's different laws that apply for minimum wage in Seattle. There's different laws that apply when you have a certain amount of employees. What are things that I should know or people that are listening should know?
Yeah. So HR is different. It's okay. Like the state of Washington, Seattle is different, Tacoma. And then you have the rest of the state, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, not top politics, but usually the more liberal a place is, the more HR laws there is, right? Well, Seattle, San Francisco, New York City, Austin, Texas have way more.
They want to protect workers.
Yeah. There's a lot of mistakes. One thing is whatever your take on immigration is, I don't care if you want illegal immigration or you're against it. If you hire someone, they have to prove to you they can work in the United States, right? Mm-hmm. We're through it. Like, there's like their passport, ID card, whatever case may be. And employee handbook, HR policies, a lot of people think, oh, it's to tell people what to do, compliance. No, it's really so what kind of culture you have, right? Suppose you have an HR policy. One person has an HR policy that says, I'll only give you 2 days off of funerals. It can only be for mother and father, right? Or wife. Mm-hmm. Someone else has an HR policy. You can take 10 days off of funerals and it's be whoever you want to take time off for. Mm-hmm. You're going to work for, right?
Yeah.
And there's no, something as simple as how many days off are you going to give people for vacation? 14 days. And then are you going to let them carry it over? Mm-hmm. With me, I would say no, because suppose I work for you, right? You give me, say you give me 10 days of vacation per year. I work for 5 years. I take no vacation, then I leave. You have to pay me other vacation when I leave.
Yeah.
Like, what small business has the money for that? Most don't.
Yeah.
And then what's that saying? Common sense is never commoner.
Yeah.
A lot of small business owners are like, this is the stuff to do is insane, right? Like, I had one person ask me, do I have to give like people time off for like federal holidays? Actually, you don't. Mm. But who's going to work for you?
Like, right.
Can I give only people 5 days off? Yeah. But who's going to work for you?
So if that's two separate questions, right? The analysis is, do you want to be an employer that people want to work for? Or do you want to understand what the laws are and then craft your business strategies around those laws? Obviously, people just don't even understand what the laws are.
No.
That's the sad part. So yeah, absolutely. You should take that step of analysis to the next level of which employer do you want to be?
Yeah.
But understanding those laws is like the basic first step. And so if you're saying, no, you don't have to give paid time off for federal holiday. No, you don't have to let vacation pay carry over into the next year if you don't want to. No, you don't have to have a handbook. But don't you think a handbook is going to be the best way to understand what it's like to work at your business?
Yeah.
And so what do you recommend for people who don't have a handbook or who don't know what these laws are?
Like us at Captain's HR right now, we're like going to the MVP phase. We're actually like doing handbooks and HR policies at no cost for companies in Seattle for not fewer people. You sign up with us, you send you a set of questions, answer the platform, the code does your handbooks and policies for you, right? And the question only you can answer, right? I have people like, can you answer it for me? No, I can't answer a question for you, right?
Yeah.
I'm not in your business, right? You know, simple stuff like holidays, time off, a welcome message. You should probably have a welcome message. Maybe not something as corny as, hey, come work for the greatest company ever, but something like that. And there's many ways to do it too. And like culture too. There's really no right or wrong culture. It's the culture that works for your company. But the thing is, you have to tell people what your culture is. Mm-hmm. Maybe your culture is, for example, Amazon culture is one culture. Starbucks is completely different. My culture, if you work at Amazon and go to Starbucks with the same mentality, you're probably not going to make it, right?
Yeah, it's not going to be a successful transition because the culture is different.
Yeah, just a lot of people you don't know, like onboarding, right? People don't know this. Suppose you hire me, right? You hire me on Monday. I have 3 days to prove to you I can work in the United States.
That's the I-9 form.
I-9 form, yeah. Yeah. 3 days. Of course, if I bring you an expired, suppose my driver's expired, I have a sheet saying, hey, I applied for it. Then, okay, give me a break. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But so many people will, like, get that wrong.
They don't even do an I-9 and they don't have an HR program. They don't have an HR person that understands that you're required to have this I-9.
And then so many people just do stupid shit. Like, this happened a few years ago. I had a friend, right? She was a female. So she was a software developer. She got laid off for one job and she was without working 3 or 4 months. And she got an interview, right? Passed the phone, passed the Zoom, had an in-person interview. She walked in, five guys, she walked in. They're like, one of the people, oh, we didn't know you were pregnant. This is not going to work out. Because obviously, we're a startup. We need somebody totally committed. You're going to become a kid. We're sorry, you apologize your time.
And that's a lawsuit right there.
Yeah.
That's a lawsuit.
But people do this all the time, right? It's, man, what are you doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really.
And then that's what somebody said, people confused to the drug free policy, right? People think drug free policy means you have to do drug testing on and on. Drug free policy is really only for if you have a $100,000 more contract with the federal government.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you're like a private employer, now, of course, you're morally opposed to drugs, all that kind of stuff, but there's not, nothing saying you have to have a drug-free policy for your private company, unless you're doing contracts that federal government hold $100,000.
So if I run a law firm and I want to encourage my staff to not come to work effed up on drugs, it makes sense for me to have a drug-free policy.
You, more than
what's that drug-free policy entail? What are the requirements for having a drug-free policy?
There's really none in your situation, right? You can say... You can be like, hey, before you get hired, you have to take a drug test. You're going to say, take the drug test for marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and fentanyl. Mm-hmm. And then every 6 months, you might get a pop-up drug test. It just, so even better scenario is like that. Suppose you have a donor shop, right? Now, if you're the cashier at the donor shop, does it really matter if you smoke dope? Maybe it doesn't, right?
Probably not.
But let's suppose you're the baker of donuts and you're hiring coke or fentanyl and you burn that shit down.
Yeah.
As far as HR, maybe not, but the interest in a care, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of things like people get, like things are HR related, but also interest related too.
So if you're running a business, is it possible to have different policies for different levels of employees or should they all be uniform?
That's a great question. I would say no, but I know a lot of people do that. And do you have different policies for salaried or versus hourly workers? Because unfortunately, whether it's good or bad, a lot of people I give like more stuff to salary employees, right? Like salary employees, like come and go as they please. Sometimes all these workers are more like micromanaged.
Yeah.
That's a great question, right? It's, I want to say it depends, but it's, you want to be fair. Then it's like, yeah, that's a tough one, to be honest with you.
Okay. Okay. So then the goal would be to just make one uniform decision that applies to everyone.
You can, yeah.
Like dress code. I've had people ask about dress code too. I'm a very casual employer, and I think that people's work speaks volumes. And if they provide good work, I could give a shit what they wore to work that day. But some of my management staff thinks it's important to be extremely presentable and to dress to the nines as much as possible. And they had a conversation with me where they were like, you're the boss, so you can wear whatever you want, but the rest of the staff needs to be wearing.
Yeah, but then you send the wrong message, right? Like you work today, you dressed up. Everyone else has to be 3-piece suits, right?
Yeah, and I'm in like, my t-shirt, like sporting comeback kid.
And then look at you side eyes, like what the fuck is this?
Yeah, who wants to work for a boss who doesn't walk the walk?
And across the culture too, I think you hire somebody, okay, wherever you want to, we don't care. Or, hey, we have to be like slacks and whatever case may be, as long as you're consistent, right? You can't be like one policy for another person, right?
So it's consistency. It's the same as that drug test policy where you're making the same.
Oh, it's crazy. Because these companies can be cows for Friday. All that really means is you don't have to wear a tie that day.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. We do casual Friday at Brumley Law Firm, but you get a Brumley Law Firm t-shirt for free that you get to sport, and we give a bunch of them out. We have a lot of cool designs.
And that thing, another thing people mess up too, though, for me, there's a difference between fair and equal, right? Suppose you have two people working for you, and everything, they both work 20 hours an hour, right? Both doing the same job. One person is like, comes to work a few minutes early, always like, you say, hey, have you done this? I've already done it. Mm-hmm. You have someone out to help people out like this. A player, right?
Yeah.
The other person comes to work 10 minutes late with breakfast, does that work to 9:30, hey, can someone help? They're like, phew, gone.
Yeah.
The work is really, you know, not.
They don't answer text messages when it's their day off, even if it's an emergency. Yeah. They're like, it's my day off.
Their average are best. At the end of the year, you give them both a raise of $25. Is that equal? Yes. I guarantee one person is going to say this is not fair.
Yeah.
And so many people do that shit, right?
And so you recommend that in those situations, the fair practice is the better practice because you'll retain the A player.
Exactly.
And who cares if you don't retain the C player? Because what happens, that C player is not someone who's dedicated the first situation, to
the
business.
The A player is going to leave because I'm not appreciated. You step the C player, man, I got a $5 raise and I'm doing shit. I'm going to keep on doing this.
Then before
your company's gone to shit.
Yeah, that's not a great way to run a business. But how do you spot C players if they're not as obvious as like showing up 30 minutes late with Starbucks?
It's tough. We had to, every business has some kind of metrics, right? I think it has to be some kind of measure. Like even just if someone is doing sales for you, like how many sales did they close? Or like
PIs,
KPIs,
metrics.
Yeah, some kind of PI. It has to be some kind of PI. I mean, maybe there's some business have that. Like obviously, like if you're doing customer service, and customer service always has complaints for one person.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, too, another thing, too, like in HR, people say hire fast and hire slow, fire fast.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, I don't believe in hire slow because I'm not saying like, hire someone the first time you meet them, but like, do you need 10 interviews?
Yeah, you know? No, that's obnoxious. And
because the only way you know someone's going to work after you actually work for them, right?
Exactly. And people then, put on a facade when they're in that interview.
The company
process.
And the employee. But then they start hire fire fast. No one fires fast. Like it's their birthday. It's Christmas. I don't feel like dealing with Jason, right? You know, before you know it, 6 months have passed. Everyone in your company is like, what the fuck is Jason doing?
Yeah. And then, morale has been affected by Jason being a C player and getting away with it for 6 months.
Yep.
And now everyone who was an A player says, why am I going to stay at a business that's failing?
Oh, why be an A player?
Yeah. Why be an A player here? I think that's really a key component of understanding like being a good business owner, because I see small business owners who reward hard work with more work.
Oh yeah, I talked about the podcast one day, yeah.
That's so sad. That's the opposite of what you're supposed to do. If someone's not performing and someone is overperforming, mm-hmm. moving the work from Jason, the C player, to Daniel, the A player, to his plate is not a reward that Daniel should be getting. And when you're an experienced, great member of the team that's able to kill it on the workload you have, and the reward for that is then you should be doing more, that's not a good business to stay in. That's you're not measuring success based on how much that person can achieve. You're supposed to be measuring success based on key performance metrics.
Or even another situation, like, you have two workers, right? They both have an hour to do something, right? One person, it takes them an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Other person only takes 20 minutes. And then, you only took you 20 minutes. Here's what more shit you do, right?
Yeah.
What?
Like, yeah. It's not fair to the talented employee, and they're not going to stay. They're not respected. It's not fair. And so we talk a lot about case managers in my firm and with other personal injury firms when we interview. So a case manager is someone who's like the first point of contact after we've signed up a personal injury case. This case manager's job is to stay involved with your treatment and your treatment providers during the treatment phase of your case. Because my job as the attorney, I'm not negotiating while you're still in treatment, because you're still in treatment. You haven't completed.
They don't have all the facts yet.
Yeah, I don't know how much your medical bills are. I can't tell you what your case value is because your medical doctors haven't said this is how injured you. So get through the treatment, then we start the legal part of the process. But we still guide people through answers to their questions, all that stuff. So the case manager is that point of contact. And that case manager in different firms can have a different number of cases. Sometimes it's 30, sometimes it's 60. Sometimes it's 200. Now, what kind of service is a case manager able to give if they're managing 200 cases?
That's a lot.
It's too many.
That's a lot.
It's too many. And a good case manager will stand up for themselves and say, this is too many. There's no way I can do a good job here. And a good case manager shouldn't be doing 100 cases, because that there's no way you can do a good job if you're managing 100 cases. There's no way you're giving client-focused service, which is a requirement at Brumley Law Firm. Client-focused service doesn't happen if you have 100 cases.
Yeah. And this is something that's a lot of people in general mess up on, right? So let's suppose I'm working for you, right? Are you going to pay me by the hour? I say, hey, Joshua, I'm going to do what I need to do this week. The task you gave me, I got to work overtime. I'm not paying you overtime, no. But I work overtime anyway. Mm-hmm. You actually have to pay me, right?
Absolutely.
Every court case in the history of the United States, even if the employer said no, had no writing, do not work overtime.
Yeah.
The overtime, the basic rule, pay for all hours work and time and a half, anything over 40 hours.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with they had permission or they didn't.
They work. If they work, they can prove they can work. You got to pay them the money.
Yeah. And maybe it's my punk background and my liberal background of living in Tacoma and Seattle my whole life, but I've never been the employer that says, I'm not going to pay you for that. I'm the employer that says, talk to me about why you need that, yeah, and let's have a conversation. And even if I tell you don't do it, if you did it, I'm going to be pissed at you, but I'm not going to not pay you.
Yeah. Or that's people don't do that.
Obviously litigation.
Yeah.
And in Washington, I've had people who tried to hire me for issues like this, and I walked right away from those conversations. But if you do not pay one penny of someone's wage, they can hire an employment attorney, and all of that employment attorney's fees are owed by the employer to recover that one penny.
Yeah.
So just pay your employees what they worked, man. It's so silly. If you have an employee who's abusing you, let them go. Don't create litigation for yourself as an employer by not paying them what they're entitled to. But again, people don't understand their rights. If you don't know I'm entitled to this money and my employer is a piece of shit and not paying it, how are you going to know? That's just the idea of making sure that people understand what their legal rights are is a huge part of being in these liberal communities.
Another thing too, like I'll tell people, like, the federal government or state government does not have any resources to go to business every day and look what you're doing. Then you make an audit once in a while. But usually it happens, an employee is going to bust, drop a dime on you, right? For example, suppose you have an admin person, right, work for your company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they get 30 minutes for lunch every day. And I'll do that for you on lunch. I'll make a call for lunch. And then they work for lunch, thinking nothing about it. A year later, they don't get promoted, don't get a raise. Now they're pissed.
Yep.
Now they go to the Department of Labor. And usually, if an employee says something, they trust the employee, right, versus the employer, right? So now you got to pay all this back pay, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Another good example, a lot of companies do those contracts employees, right? So a lot of companies, like, for example, there's a business that hired a social media contractor, right?
Mm-hmm.
On contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happened, the social media person got pissed off, quit, and deleted all the social media accounts. And the social media person, we're like, I need my last paycheck. The company was like, oh no, like, I'm not paying you.
You fucked us. Yeah.
The person, well, I'm going to go to the city of Seattle and say I'm an employee. You're a contractor, right? So I looked at the statement of work. I'm like, man, I want to hear this, but like, this reads like you make a man this person every single day. This reads an employee. So if I was you, I pay this liberal money, because not only is the city of Seattle going to say, hey, this person contract is an employee, but these other 30 so-called contractors, they're going to presume they're all employees too. And
that factor test of whether a person is an employee or a contractor is a really basic test that anyone could look up.
Yeah.
And if your social media manager that you say is a contractor to try to get around paying their employment taxes, it looks up those factors and says, no, they required me
to be at work every day from 9 to 5.
Yeah, I didn't use my own laptop. They provided me with a laptop. Whatever these things are, like, these are really simple factors to go through, and it's yes or no.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be, that's another thing, that if you go back to that employee who was disgruntled and then can go recover that money for that overtime, you think that an employment attorney who smells blood in the water for their attorney's fees, even if it's for one penny, isn't going to go depose the business and figure out every other employee that doesn't work there anymore and say, oh, you were making that receptionist work over their lunch break. How many receptionists have you had since you've been open?
And not only,
I want to talk to every one of them.
And not only that, suppose the employee went to complain, had to work till lunch. They're going to presume if you're doing that one thing wrong, you're doing everything wrong.
Yeah.
And they're going to do a deep dive. They're going to go do your onboarding, your I-9, your hiring practices. They're going to...
What about sexual harassment policies? I've been a part of conversations at other people's law firms that make me cringe and shudder with my business experience and acumen. And what do you give as guidance for employers to make sure that they're not commenting on like another employee's appearance or things that like I see as like when people say, doesn't that haircut look nice on Dylan? I say, I'm an employer and I don't notice people's personal appearance. It's a joke that I make all the time.
That's a tough one. Sexual harassment is an odd beholder, right? Like you might tell someone, hey, Becky, or that's a nice t-shirt or whatever.
Yeah.
Someone else might hear like, oh, that's sexual harassment, right?
Right.
It's, I think one thing we got to do better, I tell Becky, what dress looks like. Hopefully she would say, Jason, I don't appreciate that. Don't say it again. I don't say it again. Nowadays, most people
When Becky draws that line in the sand, you understand it's a line not to cross. Yeah. But if someone's not drawing that line in the sand, how do you know?
Yeah, you don't, unfortunately. I don't think so. It's kind of coming to standards. But most time Becky would go to the boss and go to HR, file a complaint. I'm like, I'll give him a compliment, right?
Yeah, but those are big businesses. What about in these small businesses where there's not an HR person or where your employer, the only attorney in the firm, is the one making the comment?
Yeah.
But you don't do anything until you don't get that promotion.
Yeah.
And then they leave and then they say, let me drop a dime on everything that was going on there.
Of course, you can go to the city of Seattle, different places you could go to, but it's stuff like if you have, you need a job.
Yeah.
And then,
but if you're going to quit anyways, that's when shit pops off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so these employers who have made stupid comments
or something, you like I make this up, like, suppose you give everyone off of Christmas, but you have someone who follows Islam. Mm-hmm. You can't take off for this Islam holiday, right? Mm. Stuff like that. A reasonable accommodation. Or suppose someone has a handicap. Suppose someone had an accident and they can't stand for more than an hour a day.
And you don't have an up-down desk for them. That's not reasonable accommodations. Yep.
It's a lot of stuff, right? I think a lot of companies get away with it because the boss is personable or people like them. There's so much stuff out there, right? It's hard to be a small business owner, right? You have to know all this stuff, right?
Yeah, but it's sad because people just think it's so fun to be a small business owner and they don't know. Yeah, they don't know all of the work that's associated with it. They just want to put on a tie and be the guy on a billboard. That's so stupid to me. You have to know this stuff. You have to understand what you cannot say to an employee.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if they're a man or a woman or what race they are or what gender any of that stuff does not matter. And when you hire people, you're in a position where there's a business relationship created that is like a legally observable relationship that an employment attorney can come in and beat your ass with your own words. And it's so easy. You just have to be like incredibly aware of how what you say could be used against you, what you text, what you email, all that shit.
Times are different. Way back in the day, it was common. You're a male boss. You probably dated your female coworker or your female subordinate, and they got married a couple years down the road.
Yeah, yeah.
That shit ain't happening now.
No.
That's probably why so many people are single now.
Yeah. I hope not. You need to meet people in your industry that don't work for you.
Yeah,
you
can, it's not hard.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So you only attracted the one person that works for you. You're not attracted to anyone else.
Yeah. Fire the person and then date them.
Exactly. That's awesome. Yeah. And plus, a small business owner, I have a saying, it's like kind of non-HR, but you need great people in your company, but how become a lot of companies suck, right?
Yeah.
I have a theory. I can't prove this, but during my time in the Army, post-Army jobs, and now I have a theory that every organization is 20% of the people there who are like, that's great, right? Suppose 20% of the suppose they get paid $100,000 a year. They're like, man, I get paid $100,000 to do this. I need to prove that I'm worth this. I need to add $200,000 of value. I need to do this.
The A players.
Yeah. The other 80%, like, I only get paid $100,000. I'm only going to do this. And then the A players keep on going like this. The other players keep on going like this. And the other players, man, what's going on here, right?
Yeah, yeah. So how do you find A players? How do you attract talent? Let me just say how we do it, and you tell me what I could be doing better. Because I think this is something that we do a good job at, and it's research that I'm constantly trying to understand what attracts the A players.
Let me say this. Like, one thing, a pet peeve of mine, when people say, I'm a hiring expert. No, you're not.
Yeah.
Are you telling me everyone you hired is a home run employee for your company? I highly doubt that.
Well, that's the goal, right? You always want that. Yeah. You want the best person for the best position. But I think when you're searching for A players, when you're searching for people who are going to exceed expectations, you have to understand what that person wants in a business that they put their name and their experience behind, what that person brings to the table. And if you were that person, would you want to work for you as a boss? When they see how you are as an employer or how you are as an employee at your job, what does that look like to that A player? I try really hard to exhibit that. Well, I guess I don't try because it's just who I am. It's inherent in being the business owner. I'm so excited about doing what I do that I don't really have to try. But if I had made that dress code that my other employee had mentioned to me and said, everyone has to wear a three-piece suit every day and I'm going to wear my t-shirt, what is that going to do to the morale of the A player?
They're going to start looking for other jobs.
Yeah. And so you have to understand how these things are perceived from someone who's going to be like a rider for your firm, a ride or die person for your firm. Those are the people you need. And if that means I need to let them work from home one day a week so that they can be around their family, so be it. If that's what it takes for that person to commit to my business, to commit to being a Brumley Law Firm diehard person, that is an easy win for me. If there are things beyond salary that I can accommodate for the right people, absolutely, I'm going to do it. But then it goes to, okay, if I'm accommodating this for one person, do I have to do it for all? And if I have to do it for all, do I have room for C people who are going to abuse that?
Yeah.
The C players who are going to say, I'm working from home today, and then they go back to bed. That's just not the type of people that you want working for your business. And if there's someone, as you're listening to this, who comes to mind as I'm talking about this, let that person go.
Yeah.
Rip the Band-Aid off. Sit them down on Monday morning and say, hey, I really appreciate all the time you've put into this business, but it's time for our professional careers to end.
And I definitely think as a leader, you got to realize that people are motivated by different things.
Right.
Like, suppose you have a person who works for you, they're married, and their 8-year-old kid plays baseball, and the baseball games are at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you want to let them go, right? And
but then let them go early those days.
Yes.
Yeah. Not let them go.
Yeah, let them go. But of course, they have to understand you leave them at 2 p.m. this day. That our working miss from 2 to 5, I expect you to make it up like on your own time, something like that.
Hmm.
Or maybe someone's single and they're really big into fucking running marathons.
Right.
And there's a marathon they want to run that's like Saturday morning in, I don't know, some 18-hour flight somewhere crazy, and they need to leave.
Boston. Yeah. They got to go to Boston.
Yeah. Maybe you let them do it. The thing is, like, how do you, but then you have to have a culture where people aren't jealous, right? About jealousy. Why do you let Jason go run a marathon? Why you let Tom go baseball game? I'm going to do this.
But that's that mentality that you were just talking about, where there's the employees who say, I make $100,000 a year. I need to bring more than double of that to the business. Not the employees who say, I only make $100,000 a year. Because you're never going to change that person's mind. That's who that person is. And that's who they will always be. And when people tell you who they are, listen.
Because odds are the person who went to see the baseball game at 2 p.m. has already done everything they needed to do.
They knew that they needed that time off, and they exceeded expectations so that when they came to you and said, hey, I need this time off, everything is perfect with a bow. You won't need me. Yep. You won't need me to be here for that time that I'm gone because I took care of business.
Or even they didn't take care of, hey, I can't do this, but I train.
Sunday, I'm going to come back here.
I'll train Mary Beth exactly what to do, and she's good to go. So you can cover for me, right?
Yeah. And that's building the right team is not something that happens overnight. It's something that takes a lot of time and a lot of trial and error. And when you're a business owner and you're listening to these statements, like, understand it's not going to be perfect overnight, but someone who's been with you for 5 years, who's just a staple of the business, as you listen to this, they are not dedicated to the bottom line. They're not the person that answers the phone over the weekend. They're not the person who's going to come in on their nights because some emergency happened. Is that the person you want to go to trial with?
And here's another one too. This happens a lot too, right? So let's suppose you would say Mary filed a complaint against Bob, right? Most companies, man, Mary's been here for 2 months. Bob's been here for 5 years. That's the way we believe Mary. Odds are Bob's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And no one said anything about him, right? If you do research, or maybe you did exit, interviews, you would see all of Bob's previous employees who left would say Bob's a fucking pervert, right?
Yeah.
I think too many companies are like, oh, Jason's been here 6 years.
Yeah.
We know him, right? Do you really?
Yeah. No, you don't. Know? You know what he tells you about himself. And exit interviews, another huge tool that I think
don't do that.
It's so sad.
Or they'll be like, they make it like seem forced. Or like a lot of people like say, I'll do exit interviews in person. I said, no, I think it should be online. Because like,
that's a
good example. Talk. You like, I quit, I get fired, or whatever. You would do exit interview me. In my mind, I'm thinking, man, he's gonna try to. I got me bored. Do something. I'm not gonna tell you the truth in person. But I think if you do it online, and plus
you
I
get
think
a lot more truthful feedback when you're not under the pressure of in person.
And plus, I think you gotta. I think you should wait at least a couple of weeks too, right? I don't think you should do it the day after, right? Because emotions are hot.
Yeah. I think I've been incredibly successful with exit interviews.
That's such a valuable resource.
And I think it comes down to, I'm not the boss who's going to throw a tantrum if someone's quitting. I'm going to say, hey, it's okay with me.
So many people, you're disloyal to me.
Yeah. Yeah. You're disloyal. Who cares?
If this the 1980s is over.
Yeah, yeah. This person is not dedicated to your business the way that you're dedicated to your business, and that's okay.
So many people get that wrong, too.
Yeah, yeah, and that's okay. But if they're telling you, I don't want to work here, that's not a personal, like, slight. That's about the business and about what they see as their future. That's okay. But ask them, what about this job could I be doing better?
Yeah.
And ask them, what about this job was tough for you when you started? And I got so much feedback when I started doing those exit interviews about the training process that it made me change immediately when I got that feedback from three people in a row that I sat down and said, tell me what I could be doing better as a boss. But I had that rapport because that's the type of employer I am, the type of boss I am. I said, I need to know how I can do better for the next person who sits in that chair. And that's important to me. And if that's not important to you as an employer, reevaluate being an employer.
Yeah.
Because you're not helping people. You're hurting people. You're taking from people.
That's a good point.
And so I understood that I was letting people down with the training that I was doing. And I wasn't doing a good job taking entry-level people off the street who had that great work ethic and that great cultural fit and putting them in a position to be successful for the job I was putting them in because they didn't have the experience. But there's so few people who have experience in this industry that the attorneys all fight over. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to try to steal someone from another plaintiff's personal injury firm. I wanted to create more people in this pool. That's how we fix this solution. It's, I don't need to steal Mary from my buddy Cole's law firm. I need to create a Mary.
Yeah.
How do I create a Mary? That's training.
Yep.
And I was not doing a good job training these people. Yeah. So we created this really robust training program on Trainual, which really just changed everything for us. And now every employee, no matter if they have experience or not, has to go through that training. So no one can say, I never got training.
Well, how about this? That happens all the time too. Some will say, Jason's fucking up. He's not doing right. He's kept on messing up. Have you told Jason messing up? Jason knows he's messing up. Are you sure?
Yeah.
How long has Jason been messing up? Like 3 months? So you're telling me Jason has messed up on purpose 3 months and you never told him anything?
brutal honesty is an important component of effective management.
And so you let Jason mess up for 3 months. They said nothing. And so how's that affecting your business?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a level of honesty that people really appreciate, and you don't have to be an asshole to give constructive criticism.
You don't have to be an asshole.
I want to know if I'm messing something up, and maybe I have thicker skin than most people, but I also think that when I'm giving that constructive criticism, it's never going to be, hey, you're a fuck up.
Yeah.
It's, hey, man, you and I both want to do the best possible job for this client. Here's how I would have done that.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll be more successful the next time you do it if you do it this way.
Yeah, you definitely want to say, dude, the worst fucking porn in the history.
Yeah. That's not going to help.
Yeah. Show me how you're doing this.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you thought about doing this way?
Yeah. There's really easy ways to adjust an employee's successful completion of a task if they're not being successful. You just have to understand that not everyone's going to be receptive to direct feedback.
Yeah, delivery is important.
Yeah, delivery is incredibly important. And you don't want to make it personal. And when, in my experience, a lot more employees are sensitive to that, where they're like, when they know they messed something up, they come to me and they're kicking themselves harder than I would even give that feedback. And I say, this is not the level that you're taking this error is not beneficial to our client.
Yeah.
Your response right now is the only thing that you can control. And let's get back on the horse and keep riding, because we have a job to do. Yeah. And just sitting in this bad feeling about how you messed something up isn't going to be beneficial to the future of this case. You have to fix this problem. How are we going to fix it? Come to me. Let's talk about a solution and let's just keep going. People make mistakes. That's inevitable.
They do. Also tell people to easy way to be a good boss, good leader, good whatever. Be that to your people that you want somebody to be to you, right?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, some people don't do that.
It's really sad, man. And that was something that I think made me a really bad employee when I was working for other people, is I didn't respect my bosses. And if there was a boss that came to me and leveled with me, I liked the work that I was doing, it would be a whole different version of me.
Yeah.
But so many of these bosses just didn't respect me. Why would I respect them?
Yeah, when I was Army one time, one of his boss, he told us like, and across the Army, you're never supposed to complain about your boss, your people below you, right?
No, no. Yeah, yeah.
So he was doing that. He's like, man, my boss is like micromanaging me, this and this. I can't stand it. Guess what you did the next 3 fucking next second? Micromanage the fuck out of us.
Yeah.
We're looking like, is he not seeing this?
Like, yeah, yeah. So let's talk about that concept. Like, why do you think the Army, why do you think successful organizations or encourage employers or managers or bosses or senior officials to not shit talk the people above them to the people under them? Why do you think that concept exists?
I think part of it is like loyalty, like you trust the people above you. It's a bad name. But then again, it's bad manners. And again, if my boss is a horrible boss, he's treating me badly, I can't tell people about it. I just got to fucking suck it up and suffer.
Yeah.
The Army's bad about that.
I think the solution is you got to talk to that person. And the Army is not a great place to get that.
That does not happen.
But in an organization like my law firm, I really want to encourage people who are working for me to have that open level of communication with me. I don't want a manager in my firm to go behind my back to the other managers in my firm and say, I really wish Josh wouldn't do this.
Yeah,
I want them to come to me and say, Josh, I wish you wouldn't do this.
Yeah, in the Army, you got to trust in the system that if your boss is horrible, that their boss sees it, right? Like one time I had a horrible boss, and one time, so in the Army, your boss called your raider, and then the senior raider is like, their boss, right? Senior raider came to me and said, well, Jason, I just want you to know, like, I really appreciate how you're managing so-and-so, right?
Mm.
So me, that's key was like, I know this guy fucking sucks, but he's doing a great job and I recognize it, right?
Oh, that's good. That's good. So that visibility of your grand boss coming down to you and saying,
I see this, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't do that right now, but come time for your evaluation and stuff, you will take care of you, right?
Okay, good. So in an organization like that's not a military organization, just a business, how do you prevent or encourage management from not fucking up morale by talking shit. Like, how do you, when I have to give bad news to a manager and I say, you're not meeting X, Y, or Z, I need you to perform to this level and you're falling short. I want to give that feedback directly to them. I don't do it in a public way.
Yeah.
I give it privately so that they can give that private feedback to me if they think I'm being too aggressive with my approaches or these KPIs or metrics that I'm insisting that they meet are just not meetable. They're not achievable metrics. I want that open feedback from them. But when we leave that room, I want to be a united front. And publicly, I don't ever want to see any division between two leaders in the same yeah. organization. That's not going to bode well for no. the future of that organization.
No.
So publicly, like on the internet or social media, for example, if a manager is complaining about their employer, that's a huge red flag. But also inside the business, if you're complaining about coworkers or you're complaining about a manager or you're complaining about the person under you, that affects morale in an unfixable way. How do you prevent that from happening?
I think it's tough. I don't see you can't prevent it, but you can, but it's tough. And plus, no, I think egos get involved.
Egos, yeah.
See, said this, or mm-hmm. even though it's like a private conversation, they're going to tell someone, right?
Yeah.
Man, Josh said this, read my ass. I don't deserve this, right? I'm the best employee, whatever, yeah. you know, like blah, blah, blah. I do this for the
He's setting years. Unrealistic expectations yeah. of what I'm supposed to be doing and how am I supposed to clone myself or like, and this and
how
that.
How you talking to me? He let Jason go to a baseball game at 2 p.m. What type of shit is this?
Yeah, yeah. They start comparing themselves to those C players when they know they're the A players instead of saying,
all these
this is the feedback.
Politics and like stuff comes to play, right? Office, you know, I have to say like, no matter how old you get, where your level is, it all goes back to fucking high school.
Yeah.
All go back to fucking cliques, right? Everyone, this and this, right?
Hmm.
It's not easy, right? It's tough.
The only way to manage those kinds of things to prevent them from happening is to just have the conversations before they happen.
You have to be upfront.
This is not appropriate for anyone to be having these kinds of conversations, especially management having these conversations with other management. You need to come to me if you're saying something's unfair or a metric is not reasonable.
And I think with managers too, like so many managers get promoted with no training.
Yeah.
Another thing too, like most companies, like suppose, like I'll make this up. Suppose you're working at a construction company, right? Mm-hmm. You're all part of the team, right? There's 10 people, your job is like build whatever, right? And then you get promoted. Now you're the boss of the 9 people you just having beers for the last week.
Yeah.
And so many people can't do that. They're like, they don't know how to separate. I'm the boss now. They're still the old boy mentality, right?
Yeah.
And it's usually not the guy who got promoted as far as the guys below them, right?
They don't respect
it. Yeah. Hey, Jason, what the fuck do you mean I got to do this? We were fucking drinking beers the other night in my house. Right type of shit is, right?
Yeah. I invited you to my wedding.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Exactly, right?
Now you're going to try to be my boss. Yeah, no, that's an incredibly difficult part of promoting from within. But also, like, it's so much better to promote from within than to take a risk on someone that you don't know.
You know that person, yeah.
Yeah. So I try really hard to always promote from within, but our management team is pretty solid. And when we're promoting from within, it's usually like our reception person, our entry level position is someone who we see their work ethic and we start putting them through that case manager training process and move them into a role where they're going to be doing more.
Yeah. Professional development is so important. So many people don't do that.
So many people don't. Yeah. I actually am a professor at Highline Community College in their paralegal program. Mm-hmm. And the professor who's my boss, he's, don't you think it's so great that you have this pipeline of people who you get to see as a student and then hire from? And I say, yeah, it's wonderful. He said, don't you think other employers would benefit from taking the people who are in their firm that they know their work ethic and putting them into our programs so that they can have the legal experience?
That's a good point.
And he's just go out, be a voice in the community that says, if you have someone who's good and you want to see them move up, invest in their professional development, invest in their education, give them resources that they wouldn't have if not for you. And you know that they're dedicated, you know that they're going to stick around. But if you want someone to go get a bachelor's degree in business so that they can be your operations manager or whatever, go invest, give them the tools. And if they tell you this is not something that I want to do, then listen to what they have to say. Don't force people to be proactive, give them tools and see what they do.
So how do you deal with this? Suppose you have someone who works for you, right? And your mind, like, man, this person has all the potential in the world. I can see this person like being an A-plus player, doing great things, but they just perform at C level, right? They don't see this. They don't see the greatness themselves. You see it, they don't see it. Like, how do you do? I don't see that give up on them, or do you like? How much time do you spend like, trying to motivate them? Like, hey, Jace, like, man, you'd be doing so much better for yourself. Yeah. Adding some stuff, right? How do you do that?
I think that's a current struggle. You have to understand what motivates that person specifically. And it's not always money. And money has been historically my greatest motivator in jobs. I said, well, if I'm making $20 an hour at this job and this other job's going to hire me for 25, why would I stay here? I had no loyalty to Fred Meyer or whatever. Like, I don't care. But I think when you're a small business owner, loyalty comes into play, and the relationships you have with your employees absolutely comes into play when it's not a big corporation. And money is potentially a motivator for people, but if they're not performing and you see that value, throwing money at them is not going to fix that problem. Yeah. So what is? And it's really a case-by-case situation where you have to understand what does motivate this person. Why aren't they performing? And the only way that you get to understanding that as a supervisor is understanding that person individually, taking the time to get to know that person on a one-on-one basis. And if you're managing staff in a group setting or in passing, you're not managing your staff. You have to have a relationship with that person individually. That's what keeps key people involved in where they're at and what gives them the buy-in. They have to understand what motivates you and what excites you. And if you don't know what your people are doing in their free time that makes them happy, that's why they go to work every day, to go do that thing that they want to do outside of work, then that's just a big question mark for you. You're not going to be an effective leader in those situations. No. So understand your staff, understand what they like to do, understand who they are when they're not at work, and be that open with them. Show them that side of you in a one-on-one way, not in a group setting, not in passing. Get to know your people.
Yeah. Another thing too, like a lot of people mess up too, like they'll have a small business and 20, they'll have, I don't want to do like the 20 white guy thing, so I'll change it up. They have like 20 Hispanic females. And then you have 20 Hispanic females. It's going to be hard to hire someone not like that. Or people like I'm trying to hire something else, but they still go to the same place over and over again.
I've never had that issue. I think that my firm has constantly been diverse since the first day that we started. And I'm very proud of that, but it hasn't been something that I've really had to seek out.
But so that just happened organically for you, right?
Yeah.
I think it's how it's supposed to be.
It's something that I've always had an eye on, because as a white man in the law world, I didn't want to only hire other white men. But I've been so impressed with the candidates that I've had from just every level: receptionists, legal assistants, case managers, paralegals, and attorneys. The people I've worked with have been from just tons of different diverse backgrounds. Yeah. And I don't know if that's because of the roles that I've created and the boss that I am and the community involvement that I have in these organizations that help me to find staff, and the students that I get to see as a professor.
The Highline College is a pretty diverse college too.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. And Kent is a very diverse community. So it's not like Seattle or Tacoma that's more metropolitan and has a lot more people, but a lot more white people.
Yeah.
Kent is a very international town.
Yeah.
And that's where our focus is. Our main base is in the city of Kent. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah. At the one extreme, I think too many people like just hired like all the same race. And other people, they try too hard to be diverse, right?
Mm.
Like, I'm only going to hire... The math thing is, like, I think hire the best person, right? But however common, the best person can be many different demographics, right?
Yeah.
Many demographics.
I think understanding your hiring process is really important. And if you're finding people the exact same way and then wondering why they're the exact same types of people, then...
And also make it easy to apply for a job too, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've hired some of my best people from Craigslist, mm-hmm. truly.
You know what? I found about Craigslist hiring maybe when I got the Army back in 2015. To this day, I like still boggle my mind. Like when I think of Craigslist, I think like scammy shit.
Yeah, but like, I've hired some of my best people.
Illegal
on
stuff.
Yeah. Like,
but everyone I talk to, man, I get my best people from Craigslist.
I've had bad people from Craigslist too. Don't get me wrong, but that's just people.
It blows my mind that Craigslist is like top in hiring place, right?
I think when you're an employer and you have a job, that's something of value. And to get the right people applying for that job, you have to have visibility as many places
everywhere,
as possible.
Yeah, everywhere.
And if Craigslist is what people know, go to Craigslist.
That's one thing that kills me. Like you have a small business, right? And they have an opening for, let's say, a market person. No one will apply for a market person. Where you apply? Where's the job at? It's on our website. Is it anywhere else?
Yeah.
No. If they really want the job, they'll come find it. Dude, you're fucking stupid as fuck.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. If you post a job on your website and it's not cross-posted on a platform that people have visibility.
I mean, even Amazon cross-posts shit everywhere, you know?
Yeah, man. That's another great point. When you're a small business owner, understand what other people are doing that are bigger than you and emulate them. Find out where Amazon is finding people, where Starbucks is finding people, where... People say, oh, it's so hard to find good talent. I don't believe. I don't think that good talent
is existing
because of COVID.
Is you can't find good talent or you make it too hard for people to apply or people
look or you're a bad
media,
boss or bad boss, a bad business to work for. You find shit people that are the only ones that want to work at your business because you're a shit business, man. Stop being a shit business.
Another thing too, suppose someone says they have a business, they say, man, in order for them to work here, I got to pay 9% of the labor market, right? My competition only has to pay 50%. That might be an indicator you have to pay them as money because that's how much fucking sucks to work at your company.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not offering all the same advantages that the industry is offering. So understanding, again, what are your, I don't want to say competitors because I don't see any of these other plaintiffs, personal injury attorneys as competitors. These are people that are fighting the good fight the same way I am against the insurance companies. The insurance company's my enemy, not the other plaintiff's attorneys. But if there's something that these other plaintiff's attorneys are offering that I'm not offering that I could be, I need to.
Yeah.
That's how I'm able to keep that market saturated with good people.
Let me see too, like, suppose you, we'll say, give you a benefit, you're a good boss, like in 2021. Doesn't mean you're a good boss now, right? Things change, times change.
Yeah.
Generations change. But what one generation wants, someone else wants. Just because it worked for you today doesn't mean it's going to work tomorrow, right?
It's very true. Very true. I've run this business almost 10 years now, and I've learned a lot over that 10 years about what it means to be a good boss, what it means to be a good manager of people, and that every person has different needs.
Yeah.
Understanding those needs is the key, man. That's it. If you don't understand your people, how can you run a business?
Sometimes you just have to be a good human too, right?
Yeah.
Like if someone comes to you and says, hey, my grandmother died. And suppose you had a policy that says, I give you 5 days off only for your mother, father, whatever. Someone says, my grandfather died. Are you going to say, I don't give a fuck?
Yeah.
The policy says this.
That's outrageous that any employer, but the things I hear from these previous law firms that my staff have worked for, it is like nightmarish.
Yeah.
Things that I would never in my life dream of saying to another human being, let alone someone who is dedicating their time to my business for an hourly wage.
Yeah.
But it is overwhelming what we hear from other lawyers in the world.
It's across the whole society,
it's just
right?
Business. It's just terrible business.
Like people would say, you can't time for people to die, friends, right? I don't think I ever work for anyone again, but I have five friends. They died. Dude, either you let me go, I'm fucking quitting.
Yeah,
this is a no-brainer. I know.
No, I can't imagine having different requirements for someone who's dealing with a loss based on what your relationship was. Were they blood?
Yeah.
What were you raised by your grandparents, or were you raised by your parents and your grandparent died? Grandparents die. I'm sorry. You know,
Exactly.
like what?
So you spend
No.
one week a month with them? Yeah,
Yeah,
you're
yeah,
good. You are
yeah.
close.
Your friends, how close of a friend? Did you go to high school with them, or did you drop off after high school with
Did you
them?
donate
Like,
a kidney to him?
yeah, like that's a slippery slope. If someone is telling you they need time off, you need to understand, is this someone who's going to abuse time off, or is this someone who's going to be dedicated to the business and give them what they need?
Now, of
And if
course,
they're someone that's going to abuse time off, that
you already
before
know.
they re just let them go.
Yeah.
Stop playing games
Yeah.
with them and
Now,
putting yourself in a position that's going to lead to a lawsuit later because you said the wrong shit.
if I walk for you and I say, "Hey, my granddaddy died," you're like, is this your 10th granddaddy that died? That's something different.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing. But that's the person who's abusing your system, and you just need to let that person go before they get to the point of abusing you.
Yeah.
That's not the common thing. Most of the time, the staff that I have aren't going to come to me with some hypothetical grandma because they wanted to take the week off for a camping trip.
Yeah.
If they wanted the week off for the camping trip, they feel comfortable coming to me and saying, "Boss, I want the week off for a camping trip. Can you make that happen?"
And not saying you need to know every person, detail your people, but if you have some kind of relationship, you're gonna know all this stuff, right? You're gonna know, hey, I raised my grandparents, or my camp is big, without being like too private or private life too much. Because people, what's the word? They tell people a lot of stuff without even asking, right?
I think another thing that's really powerful at my business, and hopefully I'm not telling on myself with the staff that I have, but I'm very involved on social media. I'm, like I said, I'm constantly glued to my phone, always working. And if my staff is a social media person, I'm going to engage with them on social media, and I'm never going to do it without asking first. I'm going to have that conversation. Do you feel comfortable being, friendly with me on the internet? Because I like to make posts and I want to tag my staff in those posts because that's visibility that my business can benefit from. And if they say yes, then I'm going to engage with them on the internet. But if they're posting on a day that they take off sick, that they're out on some boat in the summer and they think I'm not going to see it, that's weird. Hopefully, every employer has that ability to have that relationship with their staff. And it's not to spy on them, but it's to understand that these are people that are living their lives and learn what they like to do. And if they're telling you, "I like to camp every Memorial Day and I need that time off to drive to the campsite and pack up the campsite afterward, and so I'm not going to be here Tuesday either," let them have the time. If they're not a good employee, don't keep them around.
Yeah, but so many people do, right?
It's just they're scared of change,
Yeah.
maybe. They're scared of the work that it takes to hire another person, but that's pennies compared to what that person's costing you in efficiency at the business, in the peace of mind that you have when a staff is just showing up to work
Yeah.
without you being over their shoulder. Are you standing over everyone's desk every single day watching their screen for 8 hours, or are you trusting them to do their job? If you're trusting them to do their job, are they doing it? If they're not doing it, how do you know? If you don't have metrics in place to measure how the job is supposed to be done, they might not even know that there's a disconnect, that you're expecting more out of them than they're giving you. Your job as an employer is to give people that visibility in what does a good job look like? How is it measured? Now go do it.
And this is another reason, like I said, people don't fire fast. This is the reason you need to fire fast, right?
Yeah.
Suppose it happens all the time. Suppose Mary's working for you, Mary's not working out right. And you decide, you know what? Monday, I'm gonna fire Mary. Friday, she tells you she's pregnant.
Oh,
You're fucked.
yeah.
Because even for all the marriage, your paperwork, saying you're doing a good job, someone, Mary's mother, someone's gonna go to social media somewhere and say, hey, they fired Mary because she's pregnant. Mary told them she's pregnant, she got fired the next day. That's why you gotta, and then it can be a case with males too, right? It could be like, hey, I'm gonna fire Jason on Monday. I come to you, hey, I have cancer now, whatever, right? The case may be right. You have to fire people. Of course, you need to give them time to get trained up and learn whatever, but
Yeah, don't just fire them immediately if they have no tools to be
now 6 months
successful.
have passed and you've done everything you can. Yeah.
Or 3 years have passed and they were a great employee, and then all of a sudden, shit changed. I work with an attorney who had an employee for a long time who was doing a great job. And then at one point, something changed for him. And it might have been personal. It might have been he just saw that he was the only A player. I don't know what it was, but he saw a change in that person that eventually led to just over and over conversations that had to happen where the attorney was trying to coach him and trying to help him get back to who he was. He just didn't care. He didn't want to. And eventually he just wasn't there anymore. He just stopped showing up. He didn't formally quit. He didn't have some blow up. He just wasn't there the next day.
Something happened. Something personally.
Yeah. And it was never clear to that attorney.
Yeah. So let's talk about performance reviews real fast, right?
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people could do yearly performance reviews. Like, I believe you need to do some kind of performance metrics, but I don't believe annual reviews, right? Because my point of view, I could be wrong. Suppose I work for you, right? Me and Bob work for you, right? And you do review on us in December, right? So the whole year, I was a great worker, right? He was a piece of shit worker. November, something happens. I slack off, right? He picks up. Odds are you only remember what happens in November, December.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember January through everything else.
So there's no documentation. No one's doing anything. Most people only remember what's recent, right?
Yeah, but those two employees remember how the rest of the year was. And maybe because people have the idea that annual review means a raise, which doesn't necessarily.
Which it should not.
No, it shouldn't. Thank you for doing your job for the year that you worked here. And if you exceeded expectations, maybe you're eligible for a raise. But people come to me with their handout at their 1 year anniversary. And sometimes that's the last conversation we have with them. I'm sorry, this is not something that you exceeded expectations. You're not eligible for a raise or a promotion or something that you think you're entitled to. And this is where we end our professional paths together. Yeah. That's okay.
I would have you say on this. So people like gender pay, right? This is my take on gender pay, right? I think a lot is on the employer, right? Because example, suppose several things. Suppose me and Mary, you hire me and Mary, right? Both of you marketing people, right? For 6 months, or even before that, you must say you both can pay us $70,000, right? Odds are, that's your 95% I, as a guy, going to come to you like, dude, I'm worth way more than this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you will probably, you just might say no. Odds are going to say yes. So instead of 70,000, I say 75,000. Mary, like, oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And then 70,000 years go on, get the same increase of pay, but keeps on going on. And to make it worse, we're both for 6 months. I'm coming to you, hey, Josh, I'm going to work on time every day. I deserve a raise.
Right.
You just might say no. Mary closed a fucking $25 million court case.
Yeah.
Increase everything. And they'll tell you, ask for a raise. I'm just doing my job.
Yeah.
And I think that's, yeah.
I think just as a general idea, men oversell themselves in interviews and about their experience and about what they bring to the table to the level that they're just shitty con artists. And women generally, not every woman, obviously, but they will undersell themselves and just take a first offer. And
I tell every woman I know, like I mentioned, like, I don't care how happy you are with the offer. I don't care if you want $80,000, $120,000, ask for more, like more vacation time,
and
ask for something.
And gosh, I hope my employees don't use this against me for the rest of my life. But if anyone's listening to this, by asking for something, that doesn't mean you're rejecting the offer and it's not disrespectful. If you tell me, hey, I just can't make 80,000 work, Josh, can we do 85? If that's really what you believe, I'll try to make 85 work for the right person. If you're telling me, hey, 80 is good, but can we do 85?
Yeah.
I'm not going to hold that against you as your boss. If I can't get to 85, I'm going to tell you no. And if you say, okay, then we'll just do 80 then. That's
or maybe
fine.
Someone says, you give me like 80,000, 10 days vacation. Like, I really need 21 days. I'm willing to go down to $75,000 in 21 days.
Yeah, yeah. Give me a counter that makes sense financially for me if there's some other level of flexibility that you're asking for. But again, that's just a generality. I'm so impressed with my industry having so many powerful women in it because, like, negotiation about bills and money is such a big part of what we do in this industry. And there are just a lot more women doing it. But then the pressure is on when you're having that conversation with an employer who you respect, who's not adversarial, and you get put in what's considered an adversarial position with that person that you care about, because you're like, hey, I love this job. I do this job well, but I don't want you to think that I'm ungrateful.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, men have no problem being ungrateful.
Yeah.
Or being perceived as ungrateful.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's ungrateful to ask for a raise if you believe you've exceeded expectations.
I think the mistake is a lot of employers, small business, big business, just because someone asks you a raise doesn't mean you have to give it to them, right? I think so many people are like, I'm going to ask Josh for a raise. I don't deserve one, but he says, yes, I get a raise, right?
Yeah.
And so many people that give raises without doing the research. Okay, if I give Jason a raise, 5%, how does it affect the bottom line? How does it affect this? I was like, all that kind of stuff.
I think the feedback that I've gotten is don't give merit raises. Pay everyone the same pay for the same job and have the same metrics for everyone. And if people are exceeding those metrics, promote them.
Yeah, I also think you should pay based on labor market, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, here's a good and bad example. I had a friend one time, and she went on LinkedIn and she complained, I don't understand this, right? She was an HR person too. How is it that my friend, who is a guy, is making so much money for me in Seattle? I don't get it. We're both doing the same job. We're HR person. I got online, dude, hey, like you're HR in small town, fuck Arkansas.
Yeah.
For a nonprofit. He is an HR business partner at Amazon in Seattle.
It's different worlds.
HR business partners. I'm like, how do you not understand this? Like, the labor market is different, right?
And so understanding that paying someone in Renton is probably going to be a higher pay than someone that's in Olympia.
Yep.
It's just, what is the market paying for those people? And if you're willing to pay someone to be remote, you might be able to get really beneficial staff who are remote in a different place because they can't commute to those bigger metropolitan markets. So understanding what your business is equipped to do is really important too. We're really working hard at Brumley Law Firm to get a lot more infrastructure in place to be remote.
Yeah.
Because as we continue to expand, I'm either going to have more space or more remote staff.
Here's one for you.
It's expensive to have more space.
So remote work is great and all. It's fine. It's the thing to do. But I'm a firm believer everyone's not good at remote work.
That's
how I kind of work remote. I don't have enough discipline, right?
I love being in the office with people.
How do you make sure someone's a good remote worker? Is it a test you give them? Just work things out? Because everyone's not a good remote worker.
I think,
even though they think they are, they're really.
You're saying preemptively before hiring, how can you make sure someone's a good remote worker? I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I think every job is different. And I think expectations and metrics are the only way, clear expectations and metrics are the only way to understand if someone's able to perform a job. Mm-hmm. I have an employee who asked for a 6-day schedule with, he wanted to work on Saturdays and he's remote today. And we were having a conversation and I was like, I'm just so impressed with the work product that you put out, even when you're remote, that historically I've not been able to get out of people who were remote. And it's very clear to me that you take your job just as seriously when you're at home as you do when you're in the office. And I just wanted to tell you, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Because I've been burned so much that I'm like reluctant to have this idea of being 100% remote for people who might need it, because I think everyone's going to take advantage. That's our knee-jerk reaction as business owners. Yeah. Everyone's going to take advantage. They're just going to have their alarm go off, put on a mouse movement app on so their Teams is always active, and then be like, oh, sorry, I was in the bathroom. Oh, sorry, I was on my break. And go back to bed. And that's not how people act. And if you understand that, like, people are wasting their time when they're in your office. They're wasting time no matter where they're at. You're not going to get eight straight hours of work out of someone.
Yeah.
But that's, you just have to understand that.
Yes. That's so that if you're in the office, out of the 40 hours, you're probably going to work in 25 at the best. You
know. Oh my God. I'm glad that my staff is working so hard, because I'm positive that's not a metric that makes sense for us. But if that's how other offices are run, wow, we're above that.
You think about it, if you're in the office, you going by, hey, you see the Seahawks play last night?
Yeah.
You do this, you do
those
that.
Kind
you
know, of conversation, the water cooler conversations. and other people talking too loudly on speakerphone and having their conversations loudly where you're not able to focus. And when you're at home, if you have a home office that you can just be locked in and just be doing your work, then that's great. But I think a lot of people also benefit from that social interaction, and that's why they work for your firm. And you get mentorship in ways that you didn't expect to get from listening to other people.
Yeah, I know it definitely proven that if you're a first-time worker or junior worker, remote work's the fucking worst thing for you, right?
Yeah,
it's the worst
you
thing
can't
for
you. Do it. But when you're an attorney with 10 years of experience who's working
totally
remote,
different.
It's a whole different thing.
Totally different.
Whole different thing. But how do you, as an HR advice, like what's the advice you give to an employer who says some staff can be remote and some can't, because that's not a uniform policy.
Yeah.
And that's where we really have a hard time.
I'm an example. So you have a construction company, right? Obviously construction people have to be outside working.
Yeah.
But does your marketing bookkeeper need to be in the office?
No.
I mean, they don't. But then how you get over that jealousy and ego? I think I have to explain to them, like, each, this is your job, this is your responsibility, these are responsibilities, right? Like, just because you have to work outside doesn't mean my marketing person can work outside with you.
Mm-hmm.
Just, are you going to want to go inside and work as a construction worker? Probably not, right?
No.
Like, you have your lane, right?
Yeah. So it's about that job and what the requirements of that job.
Everyone, like, hey, yeah. Another thing, too, like, another pet peeve of mine is, like, I think a lot of companies, they'll say, we work remotely. Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, remote work means work from anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not from China, Vietnam.
If
maybe.
The time zone is something that you're willing to just adjust to and be working overnight.
It's like telework. You can work from home, but you have to maybe get in touch in 10 minutes. That's not remote work. That's telework.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the same shift that everyone's on, and we have to be able to
and
access
work is
it.
Be able to go, I don't know, a lot of Vegas.
And as long as your work is getting done, it doesn't matter what time, day or night, it's getting done at.
Yeah.
And that's really tough too. I think that a lot of what we do in this industry has been when the adjusters are working, when the insurance defense attorneys are working. And so we're really locked into that time frame. But if someone's like, hey, I'm going to be in Atlanta for a week and I'm just going to be working remote for that 1 week while I'm in Atlanta, I don't think that there's a problem with that, because it's never going to be live updates on a case.
Yeah.
I'm sending an email and hoping they get back to me tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right, cool. Let's move back to you. Is there something out there, suppose someone is looking, someone's an accident or who used a murder, whatever case be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something they could go to look up lawyers, like win loss rate?
Nope.
No. Okay.
Nope. Every lawyer is going to just promote themselves in the best light that
there's
they
nothing
can.
To say.
There's no
basic cabinets.
There's no statistical measurement.
Okay.
Maybe you should start one. I don't know. I think win loss rate is in the eye of the beholder, right? If you went to the insurance company after your car accident, you said, I need $2,500 for my car accident. And they said, gosh, Jason, you're such a good negotiator. Here's $2,500. You got us. You'd count that as a win.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't. And so what's that change in perception? How is that measurable? And so there's never going to be a clear win-loss. When people ask me, how much do I win? I always win, because I don't take cases that I'm going to lose on. And if an attorney is saying, I win 50% of the time, you're not going to sign up with them. Of course not. So there's no reasonable way to track that metric. There's no realistic way that is measurable to track that metric, especially in this industry where, you know, if you're not at fault for the accident and I somehow lose your case, that's like malpractice at that point. Like, that I shouldn't be practicing it as an attorney. The metric isn't, did you win or lose? The metric should be based on how much that policy limit is. If you had access for the person who hit used $25,000 policy, if I settled it for $2,500, that's not a win. If I settled it for $15,000, based on what your injuries are or what your life is like and how much you're expecting to do the treatment, that might be reasonable. But if I got all $25,000, I'm not able to get more than that. That's a win to me. I'm not able to get in excess of what that person who hit you has to offer in their insurance policy. So that's how we measure success at my firm is, did you get the policy limit or not? Okay. If you didn't, why? Is it because they have video footage of this person at the gym and going to raves and snowboarding and doing all this crazy shit because the person didn't listen to any of our advice about taking it easy while they were in treatment and obviously they're not hurt? Then yeah, that's a good reason not to get the policy limits maybe. But in every one of these cases, if someone's really injured and it's a $25,000 policy limit, there's no reason why you're not getting that policy limit from the insurance company unless you're just bad at negotiating or the client's not doing a good job doing the treatment they need.
What does the lawyer have to do to get disbarred? Is that pretty hard to get disbarred?
The Bar Association is governed, like it's our governing body. So it's like we police ourselves with former prosecutors that get hired by the Bar Association and are paid by our annual dues and some other ways. And so these bar complaints that people file when you have a shit attorney, the bar complaints get referred to the Bar Association to either prosecute or dismiss. And if they want to prosecute the bar complaint, then it goes to a hearing potentially. And there's negotiations just like a criminal case where if someone wants to take like a plea deal instead of getting disbarred, where they maybe take a suspension for 6 months or something like that, they can do that as well. But I don't know any attorneys that have been disbarred. I know plenty of attorneys who have had bar complaints, but those bar complaints can get dismissed very easily. A bar complaint does not mean you had a bad attorney or anything like that. It's just sometimes people are like, my attorney charged me too much. Did you sign a contract and the attorney said how much they were going to charge you in the contract? Yes. That's not a founded bar complaint. You should have maybe shopped around. If that attorney was charging too much, you would have figured it out in the front end. If your attorney was doing something unethical based on their billing practices, that's a different complaint. And so understanding what the rules of professional conduct are, which are a requirement for all attorneys to adhere to, about what their billing practices are, what their marketing practices are, what their conflict of interest practices are, different things like that. Those are the RPCs are what govern professional conduct with our industry. And if those RPCs are violated, that's when you're at risk of sanctions or bar compliance issues with being disbarred or some other professional conduct issue.
If you pass the bar to Washington State, does it mean you can practice the law in any state or just only Washington?
No. If you pass the bar in Washington, we have what's called the uniform bar exam. And so your score can get transferred into other states. But after you pass the bar, you still have to do a Washington law component exam. And then after you pass that exam, then you can get sworn in to practice law in Washington. But for example, Alaska has a higher score requirement than Washington has for the uniform bar exam. And New York has, I believe, a lower, last I checked, this was years ago, so I'm not up to date on getting sworn in other states. But every year you have to pay dues for the state that you're licensed in. So if I wanted to be like some crazy baller attorney who got licensed in every state that I could, I'd be paying like $20,000 a year to be licensed in states where I never made any money. It doesn't make any sense. So most attorneys are only licensed in one or potentially two states if they're have homes in both states or they live in a border town where like I'm between Oregon and Washington, so I don't know which one I'm going to practice in. But the laws are not the same in every state. A lawyer who's licensed in multiple states, it's that idea of jack of all trades, master of none. You're not going to be the best if you're trying to spread yourself too thin.
If you work for a corporate, suppose you work for a big law firm. I suppose you work for Boston Legal in the TV show.
Okay.
Does Boston Legal pay all this stuff for you? Or are you still responsible for paying yourself?
Every firm does their own hiring decisions, employment contracts, that kind of thing. At my firm, we pay all that stuff for you. I can't say for sure that other law firms are exactly the same. They might say it's up to you to stay up to date with your CLEs, continuing legal education credits that are a requirement for you to do. It's up to you to pay your licensing fees and all that and stay up to date with that. But my business is small enough and successful enough that we're able to provide that as a benefit. We're always looking for other attorneys, other paralegals or law students who are getting ready to take the bar. So understanding that's a benefit that you don't have to pay for if you work at Brumley Law Firm, I think that's another thing that brings in those A players, man.
But let's suppose there's someone in college right now, sophomore, junior, and they're very interested to become a lawyer. What advice would you have for this person?
Go to court and watch court and understand what area of law you might have an interest in. If you like public speaking or not, there's still lots of law jobs, lawyer jobs you can have and not be interested in public speaking. Intern. I had someone on my podcast, ironmindpodcast.com. This podcast has really been a really educational tool for me as an individual. But I had someone on my podcast who said, if I wanted to be in this industry, I'd find someone like you, Josh, and I'd go into your office and I'd say, how can I intern here for free? I'd go pick up your dry cleaning. I just want to be in the rooms with you, learning what you do so that I'd be able to bring something of value to you over time. Because as an entry-level attorney, I'm not going to know shit. I don't know how to do this. Everything that you're paying me to do is something you're also going to have to teach me how to do. So if I really cared about being the best, I wouldn't be coming to you with my hand out asking for $100,000 a year. I'd be coming to you saying, how can I learn from you? And then when I'm ready, please tell me that I'm ready and put me on your payroll. But until then, I'm going to do everything I can to just learn from you. And that's not something that everyone has the capacity to do. People have bills. They can't work a job for free. But if someone came to me as a student and they said, can I have a free internship, an unpaid internship here? I can't imagine turning that person away.
So Josh, anything I asked you that I haven't or anything else you want to talk about?
Gosh, I'm really excited to have this podcast episode of yours as part of my podcast as well. It's really exciting. I've never been able to interview someone while I'm a guest on their podcast, but this was like the perfect dual interview process. So thank you for your time. Thank you for setting aside your Saturday to talk with me, man. This has been really beneficial for my business as well.
Thank you. So Josh, is you give a lot of value, talk about a lot of things, but is there any last second wisdom or advice on anything you want to talk about?
I think being a business owner is incredibly difficult, and to remember that these people depend on you to set a good example for what this business is and to not be an absent business owner. You can't be involved as a leader, as a manager, as an owner of a business. You're not physically present. And if you don't understand what your staff is doing, you have to know that job as well as they know it to be able to manage them. And if you don't know it, you need to hire someone to manage them who does.
Josh, thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And to our listeners, thank you, Thomas Rowe, and remember to be great every day.